The Big Story from the Straits Times on Money FM 89.3.
With me today, our panel of experts, both local and international. Professor Leo Yeeson, Executive Director of the National Center for Infectious Diseases. Professor David Heyman is an infectious disease epidemiologist at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Professor Teo Yik Ying, also an epidemiologist, is Dean of the NUS Saw Swee Hock School of Public Health. Welcome, everyone. Singapore is planning to lift circuit breaker measures in three phases starting next week. In the first phase, only about a third of workers can return to their workplaces. Schools reopen, but most retail outlets and restaurants can't. Some people are asking if the government is being too cautious, given the low number of community transmissions. Doing it so slowly over several weeks or even months means a slower economic recovery. So the question to the panel today is, can Singapore safely move faster? Yeeson, what is the greatest worry the healthcare sector has about easing measures?
In practical terms, I would think that it's more important for us to anticipate what kind of issues we face with the reopening, many of the measures that we're going to put in place. Now, coming back to school, we can't be closing school forever. At some point in time, we have to reopen and we have to reintroduce into our own educational system. So I think it's more important that we anticipate what kind of problem that we may face and have readiness, have a plan to be able to deal with these potential difficulties that we're going to face. So essentially from the healthcare segments that we look at it, it will be important for us to have a mechanism to be able to continue monitoring, to surveillance the issues, as well as having ready solutions that we can step in as quickly as possible. In the end of it, I think the most important thing is that we do progressive opening and we adjust along the way and we find a balance.
When you say anticipate, are you anticipating a surge in cases? I mean, do you have beds ready, people on standby? Is that what you are referring to?
Well, we have to come to a balance. As we reopen, and we're going to introduce back many of the services that currently we put on hold. Many patients will require different form of treatments that we have to now bring them back into the healthcare system. So we have to find a balance where we can take care of COVID cases as well as our regular services. And this is something that we can't be doing in a sudden. We have to progressively open, and at every step we must be able to monitor and give us the visibility in terms of how we're going to plan the subsequent steps.
Right, so right now your greatest concern is bringing back people who are non-COVID patients into the healthcare system for the treatments that they need, while making sure that you still have the capacity for the COVID patients. Would that be correct?
Yes, I would say that many of the healthcare services has been ongoing, but there are certain clinical services that we put on hold, and we cannot be putting them on hold forever. We have to bring them back into the care system. So moving forward, it is basically a balance that we have to give, and we have to be very clear in terms of the goal that we want to reach. So essentially, we want to give good care to all the patients that require management, whether COVID or non-COVID. And in the end, what we want to see is equitable treatments across where we can achieve good outcome, reduce morbidity as well as reduce mortality.
Right. So long as the numbers do not overwhelm the healthcare system, and touch wood, it hasn't done so yet, you would not worry unduly.
We don't need to worry. We just need to be prepared.
Right. Just be prepared. Very good. So David, could I ask you to share some international examples of successful lifting of lockdown measures?
The best examples come from Asia, because you've been prepared after the MERS or the SARS corona outbreaks that have occurred in the past years. You've developed the capacity you need in your hospitals to deal with the surge. You've also been able to do contact tracing and isolation of patients, which many countries in the rest of the world abandoned very early. So I would think that the best examples are what's going on in Singapore, in Hong Kong, in Taiwan, in South Korea, and in Vietnam. You've been able to keep the reproductive number low. You've been using these unique circuit breakers instead of just locking down everything at once. You've locked down parts of the economy and then opened it up again. And I would agree with what Yeeson said, that you can't keep things closed forever. We have to learn to live with this disease while it's with us. And the best way to do that is to begin to cautiously, with the systems of monitoring in place, open up schools, open up businesses, and get on with life, as is happening now in Europe.
Right. Now, David, you mentioned Asian countries. Singapore is only starting to lift its measures next week, so we are a little bit behind some of the others, like Korea, Vietnam. Would you say that their lifting of measures has been a good example for Singapore to follow?
Well, I think Singapore had left certain sectors open at the start of the outbreak and then locked them down and then opened them up again. And this is clearly based on the epidemiology of what's happening. And it makes much more sense epidemiologically than just locking down a whole society without any exit plans, which is what happened in many European countries.
Ying, David, as epidemiologists, where do you see the greatest potential for transmission of the disease with the easing of measures? Would it be at workplaces, schools, or the public transport system, or somewhere else altogether? Ying, what's your take?
I think it really boils down to individual practices. And rather than trying to pigeonhole transmission risk with respect to the different types of activities. Because I think if we look globally at countries and regions that have done immensely well, such as what David has mentioned earlier on, such as South Korea, Hong Kong, or Taiwan. For example, in South Korea, their first wave was really because of that small handful of people going to a place of worship, even though they were already ill. And right now, South Korea is trying to contain a growing cluster that started with one club-going person and who was hopping between multiple clubs. So while we try to look at the risk for different activities and try and pigeonhole this risk, the reality is that when people are returning to work on-site, children are going to schools, the public taking public transportation, all of this risk, all of these activities can be very low risk if everyone is taking the necessary precautions, or they could be very high risk if people are behaving irresponsibly and not taking personal responsibility. And I think this is where I think it's safe to say that nobody can guarantee that when we ease some of these restrictive measures, that there will not be a resurgence. What we do know based on data, say from Singapore and from the rest of the world, is that the coronavirus spreads the best when people are interacting in fairly close proximity, perhaps over an extended time, be it talking, eating together. And I think this is really the reason why many governments, many sensible governments worldwide, as well as the World Health Organization, issued the same reminders around safe social distancing, to minimize physical interactions, good personal hygiene, and right now, including the advice on mask wearing.
Thank you, David, Yisin, Yikying. We need to wrap up the session now, but do keep abreast with the latest on the coronavirus in Singapore and around the world at StraitsTimes.com. I'm Salma Khalik. Goodbye and stay safe.